This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of Audio Reading Service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Jennifer with
Stuart.
For the next 2 hours, we will be reading selections from the Friday, August 22nd Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, copyright 2025. We'll begin with news for the first hour and then take a short break. When we come back from the break, we'll read obituaries, then a number of features from the Weekender section. After that, we'll read from the perspective section, including letters to the editor and editorials. After editorials, we'll read the TV listings, sports, and birthday announcements. The headlines from the front page of the Friday, August 22nd Journal Gazette are: Israel preparing to capture Gaza City. Murder attempt charge gets filed. Russian strike on Ukraine hits American factory. Federal agents set up checkpoints. D.C. residents on edge. Now here's Stuart with the first article.
Russian strike on Ukraine hits American factory. By the Associated Press. Dateline, Kiev, Ukraine. Russia launched a rare drone and missile attack on western Ukraine overnight, officials said Thursday, striking targets including an American-owned electronics plant and injecting further uncertainty into the U.S.-led efforts to end the three-year-old war. The aerial assault on a part of Ukraine that has largely avoided such focused attacks was one of Russia's biggest this year and came amid Moscow's objections to key aspects of proposals that could end the fighting following Russia's February 2022 invasion of its neighbor. U.S. President Donald Trump discussed the war with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Alaska this week before hosting Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and European leaders at the White House on Monday. Russia's defense ministry said the strikes targeted enterprises of the Ukrainian military-industrial complex, including drone factories, storage depots, missile launch sites, and areas where Ukraine troops were gathered. Russia has repeatedly denied targeting civilian areas of Ukraine. But in a post on X, Zelensky wrote that the Russians practically burned down an American company producing electronics, home appliances, nothing military. The Russians knew exactly where they lobbed the missiles. We believe this was a deliberate attack against American property and investments in Ukraine, Zelensky wrote, adding, telling attack, right as the world awaits a clear answer from Russia on negotiations to end the war. Trump last month questioned Putin's commitment to ending the war, saying the Russian leader talks nice and then he bombs everybody. In a social media post Thursday, Trump criticized his predecessor, Joe Biden, for not providing Ukraine with more weaponry and it needs to fight back. It is very hard, if not impossible, to win a war without attacking an invader's country, Trump said. It's like a great team in sports that has a fantastic defense, but it's not allowed to play offense. That is no chance of winning. It is like that with Ukraine and Russia, he said. The White House didn't immediately respond to a request for comment on whether Trump is considering changes to the types of weapons the U.S. will provide to Kiev. Russia has fired nearly 1,000 long-range drones and missiles at Ukraine since Monday's White House talks, according to Ukrainian tallies. European countries are discussing how they can deploy military assets to deter any post-war Russian assault on Ukraine. But the Kremlin won't accept the deployment of any troops from NATO countries, and Russia Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Wednesday that making security arrangements for Ukraine without Moscow's involvement was pointless. Putin is ready to meet with Zelensky to discuss peace terms, Lavrov said Thursday, but only after key issues have been worked out by senior officials in what could be a protracted negotiating process because the two sides remain far apart. Ukrainian and European leaders have accused Putin of stalling in the peace efforts in the hopes that his bigger army, which has been making slow advances, can capture more Ukrainian land. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio planned to host a conference call Thursday with the national security advisors of European countries expected to play a role in future security guarantees for Ukraine, a senior U.S. Official said.
Federal agents set up checkpoints, D.C. residents on edge. From the Associated Press, Dateline, Washington. Federal authorities have set up checkpoints around the nation's capital, sometimes asking people for their immigration status and detaining them as President Donald Trump's crackdown ensnares more residents each day. Trump claimed that a crime crisis required his Republican administration's intervention in the Democratic-led city this month, brushing aside statistics that showed the problem was already waning. However, immigration enforcement appears to be a priority, as more than a third of the people arrested in the last 2 weeks were in the country illegally, according to the White House. Hundreds of federal agents and National Guard soldiers have surged into Washington, leaving some residents on edge and creating tense confrontations in the streets. A daycare was partially closed on Thursday when staff became afraid to go to work because they heard about federal agents nearby. An administrator asked parents to keep their children at home, if possible. Other daycares have stopped taking kids on daily walks because of fears about encountering law enforcement. The White House said there have been 630 arrests, including 251 people who are in the country illegally, since August 7, when Trump began surging federal agents into the city. Trump has been ratcheting up the pressure since then, seizing control of the D.C. Police Department on August 11 and deploying more National Guard troops, mostly from Republican-led states. On Thursday evening, Trump visited with officers and troops at a U.S. Park Police facility in the latest show of force from the White House. "We're not playing games," he said. Trump suggested that operations in the city could be drawn out and serve as a model for others around the country. "We're going to make it safe and we're going to go on to other places, but we're going to stay here for a while," he said. Earlier this week, Vice President J.D. Vance and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth visited some of the troops at Union Station, showing their support while protesters chanted "Free D.C." Soldiers have been largely stationed in downtown areas such as monuments on the National Mall and transit stations. However, federal agents are operating more widely through the city. District of Columbia Mayor Muriel Bowser acknowledged the proliferation of traffic checkpoints on Thursday. "The surge of federal officers is allowing for different types of deployments, more frequent types of deployments like checkpoints," Bowser said. A crowd of people gathered outside a municipal office building at the corner of 14th and U Streets Northwest to protest Trump's crackdown, waving signs and cheering speakers who denounced the president's plans. Several police cars and National Guard troops were parked nearby. There is a photo with this, and the caption reads, "President Donald Trump speaks with members of law enforcement and National Guard soldiers Thursday in Washington as Interior Secretary Doug Burgum and Attorney General Pam Bondi listen."
Murder attempt charge gets filed. City man, 28, accused of targeting ex-girlfriend. By Devin Filchak of the Journal Gazette. A 28-year-old man was formally charged Thursday with attempted murder after a shooting that allegedly targeted his ex-girlfriend and her boyfriend and sent bullets through a nearby home. Devontae M. Grant of Fort Wayne has also been charged with felony criminal recklessness and misdemeanor unlawful possession of a firearm by a domestic batterer. He was booked into the Allen County Jail on Thursday. He is accused of shooting at the couple July 23 in the Sunoco gas station parking lot at Hannah and East Lewis Streets, south of downtown. The shooting was first reported by a woman who was at home near the gas station. Officers found two separate bullet holes on the home's north side, including one that passed through a mirror before striking curtains that covered the homeowner's bedroom window, according to a probable cause affidavit. Five people, including a one-year-old, were at the home during the shooting. Investigators found 16 .40-caliber shell casings in the gas station parking lot, the affidavit said. About 20 minutes after the shooting, Grant's ex-girlfriend called police to report being shot at. Her Buick Encore had a bullet hole in the center of the rear passenger door, and that window was shattered, according to the affidavit. The woman's boyfriend was sitting in the passenger seat when the shots were fired. The boyfriend said Grant appeared to be hiding along the minivan the defendant was driving, which the male victim perceived was an effort to hide his action to ambush them, the affidavit said. The woman said Grant and her boyfriend had numerous previous confrontations. Grant had also threatened to kill her boyfriend several times, she added. The man said it wasn't the first time Grant threatened him with a gun. After the shooting, Grant reportedly sent messages threatening the woman, which she perceived to also be toward her family, the affidavit said. The woman said she lived across the hall from Grant at a housing complex. Surveillance video shows the shooting, including Grant briefly chasing the Buick on foot before firing several rounds. He then fled in the minivan, according to court records. Grant was identified by witnesses, and the clothing he was wearing in the video matched photos and video he had shared on Facebook earlier that day, police said. When interviewed a few days later, the male victim told police he had fired twice in self-defense, and those shell casings were found in the Buick. Surveillance video showed that Grant was the initiating aggressor, the affidavit said. After he was arrested, Grant reportedly told police he drove his aunt's minivan to the gas station and his cousin, who accompanied him, was the suspect who fired the gun, records said. Grant then allegedly confessed after police said they knew his cousin wasn't the suspect. Grant said the shooting was in retaliation because his ex-girlfriend's boyfriend had shot at him 3 weeks earlier, which wasn't reported, the affidavit said. Grant's initial hearing is scheduled for 8 a.m. Friday in Allen Superior Court. If convicted on all charges, he would face up to 87 years in prison.
Israel preparing to capture Gaza City. Offensive could begin within days after Netanyahu's okay. From the Associated Press, Dateline Deir al-Balah, Gaza Strip. Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Thursday he will give final approval for the takeover of Gaza City while also restarting negotiations with Hamas aimed at returning all the remaining hostages and ending the war on Israel's terms. The wide-scale operation in Gaza City could start within days. Netanyahu's approval was expected during a meeting with senior security officials late Thursday, but no decision was announced before midnight in Jerusalem. Hamas said earlier this week that it had agreed to a ceasefire proposal from Arab mediators, which, if accepted by Israel, could forestall the offensive. The Israeli military has begun calling medical officials and international organizations in the northern Gaza Strip to encourage them to evacuate to the south ahead of the expanded operation. The military plans to call up 60,000 reservists and extend the service of 20,000 more. Israel strikes, meanwhile, killed at least 36 Palestinians on Thursday across Gaza, according to local hospitals. A renewed offensive could bring even more casualties and displacement to the territory where the war has already killed tens of thousands and where experts have warned of imminent famine. Many Israelis fear the operation could also doom the remaining 20 or so living hostages taken by Hamas-led militants in the October 7, 2023 strike that ignited the war. During a visit to the military's Gaza command in southern Israel, Netanyahu said he would approve the army's plans to retake Gaza City and had instructed officials to begin immediate negotiations for the release of all hostages and an end to the war on terms acceptable to Israel. These two things, defeating Hamas and releasing all our hostages, go hand in hand, he said. It appeared to mark Israel's first public response to the latest ceasefire proposal drawn up by Egypt and Qatar. Egyptian and Hamas officials say it is almost identical to an earlier one that Israel accepted before the talks stalled last month. The proposal would include the release of some of the hostages in exchange for Palestinians imprisoned by Israel, a pullback of Israel forces, and negotiations over a more lasting ceasefire. Israeli troops have already begun more limited operations in Gaza City's Zeitoun neighborhood and the built-up Jabalia refugee camp areas where they have carried out several previous large-scale raids over the course of the war, only to see militants later regroup. The military says it plans to operate in areas where ground troops have not yet entered and where it says Hamas still has military and governing capabilities. So far, there has been little sign of Palestinians fleeing en masse, as they did when Israel carried out an earlier offensive in Gaza City in the opening weeks of the war. The military says it controls around 75% of Gaza, and residents say nowhere in the territory feels safe. Hundreds gathered Thursday for a rare protest in Gaza City against the war and Israel's plans to support the mass relocation of Palestinians to other countries. Women and children held placards reading Save Gaza and Stop the War, Stop the Savage Attack, Save Us, against a backdrop of destroyed buildings as Palestinian music played. Unlike in previous protests, there were no expressions of opposition to Hamas. We want the war on Gaza to stop. We don't want to migrate. 22 months. It's enough. Enough death. Enough destruction, said Bison Ghazal, a woman displaced from Gaza City. In Israel, protesters marched Thursday night in Tel Aviv, holding banners that read, "The people will bring back the hostages," and "How much blood will be spilled?" Among the demonstrators was Dudu Dotan, who said Netanyahu is endangering the remaining hostages by moving forward with the planned Gaza City offensive. Of the 50 still being held in Gaza, Israel believes about 20 hostages are still alive. Plans for widening the offensive have also sparked international outrage with many of Israel's closest Western allies, but not the United States, calling on it to end the war.
Academic year begins with new logo. By Ashley Sloboda of the Journal Gazette. The University of St. Francis logo is getting a new look in time for the start of the fall classes Monday. The Catholic institution is expected to introduce the new logo today along with a new academic seal and monogram. These elements of the St. Francis brand were designed to become visual and emotional touch points for our vibrant university in the 21st century, University President Lance Ritchie said in a statement. This is the first update to the logo and seal since 1998, when St. Francis College became the University of St. Francis, according to a news release provided Thursday to the Journal Gazette. The monogram, a stylized SF, is the university's first, the release said. The changes were shared with the campus community in conjunction with the start of the new academic year, the release said. Students began moving into residence halls Thursday morning. Welcome weekend activities continue through Sunday. The logo and seal stemmed from the images of the university used for decades, allowing the designs to respect tradition while embracing the future, the release said. Elements include a cross above two arms crossed at the wrist, palms open. While reflecting our continued commitment to academic excellence and our Catholic heritage, the evolved designs do so in a fresh, simplified way, Ritchie said. More than just a visual element, the logo and academic seal are symbols of everything our university stands for. The separate athletics logo, a cougar head, will remain in use, the release said. The monogram will bridge the gap between the primary and athletics logos, the release said. We believe our first monogram will boost our identity in helping us become more recognizable in the community and beyond, Ritchie said.
The following are news briefs for Fort Wayne and Allen County. Bright Point gets $20,000 grant. Bright Point Development Fund has received $20,000 from First Merchants Bank to strengthen and expand its technical assistance programs for underserved entrepreneurs in Northeast Indiana, officials announced Thursday. The donation is a significant increase from the $5,000 contributed by the bank last year, according to a news release. The enhanced investment addresses a vital gap in accessible, affordable capital and ongoing post-loan support for small businesses, the release said. With this funding, Bright Point Development Fund can better support entrepreneurs with that will improve repayment rates and foster sustainable growth, officials said. Founded in 2011, Bright Point Development Fund, a subsidiary of Bright Point, is a nonprofit organization that provides business loans, financial education, and housing development services. It is a U.S. Small Business Administration, microlender, and a U.S. Department of the Treasury Community Development financial institution. Adams Township officials to meet. Adams Township officials have issued a public notice of an upcoming meeting. The Adams Township Advisory Board will hold an emergency meeting at 6 p.m. Monday at 1125 Hartzell Street, New Haven. The notice, which was issued Thursday, did not include an agenda or the meeting's primary topic. Adams Township includes most of southeast Fort Wayne in addition to New Haven. City, county unveil road work projects. More road work is scheduled for this week and next week, city and county officials announced Thursday. Crews will install a water main valve system on Reed Road at St. Joe Center Road beginning at 8 a.m. today. The closure is expected to last through late afternoon. During construction, traffic on St. Joe Center Road will be reduced to one westbound lane at the Reed Road intersection. In addition, the southbound turn lane from Reed onto the westbound St. Joe Center will be closed. Rothman Road's westbound lane between Wheelock Road and Ballantyne Cove will be closed today and Saturday. The road work is for a new private development and is not a city project, according to a news release. Holopeter Road between Tonkel and Viberg Roads will be closed Monday from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. for crossover pipe replacement. Advantage Housing gets $55,000 grant. Advantage Housing Incorporated has received a $55,000 grant through the Federal Home Loan Bank of Indianapolis Community Multiplier Member Match Program. The grant was awarded in partnership with First Farmers Bank and Trust, according to a news release. The funding will help Advantage Housing open a second housing counseling office in Wabash County to provide more immediate support for residents experiencing a housing crisis. The new office will be at the Bliss Point Inn, 1950 South Wabash Street, Wabash, where many individuals in need are provided safe, quality emergency shelter. The grant will allow the nonprofit to hire an additional case manager and property manager, outfit the donated office space, and upgrade technology to better serve clients, the news release said. It will also enhance landlord engagement to create more housing opportunities for those facing significant barriers. The Community Multiplier Member Match Program supports targeted affordable housing initiatives that fall outside of FHL Bank Indianapolis's other grant programs. Grants range from $25,000 to $125,000 for eligible nonprofit organizations headquartered in Indiana or Michigan, with a required 10% funding match from the partnering financial institution. Wabash Foundation to give kids shoes. The Community Foundation of Wabash County on Thursday announced a new partnership with New Shoe Day to provide a new pair of shoes to all students in 4th through 8th grades who are enrolled in the foundation's Imagine Early Scholarship Program. The partnership makes Wabash County, Indiana's first shoe-secure county by ensuring each student has the opportunity to receive a new, properly fitting pair of name-brand shoes, according to a news release. Enrollment in the Imagine Early Scholarship Program is simple and free. Families open an Indiana 529 direct account and sign a participation agreement. Any student in the designated grades who is already enrolled or who signs up by October 17 will be eligible to receive the free pair of shoes. Families can enroll in Imagine Early for free by going online to imagine-early.org/enroll. The Community Foundation encourages all Imagine Early families to accept the shoes, regardless of financial need, to create a sense of teamwork among students as they build a bright future alongside one another. Families who wish to give back are encouraged to contribute to their child's 529 account.
UNESCO chair goes to two PFW educators. Professors study speakers of non-dominant languages. By Sherry Slater of the Journal Gazette. Two members of the Purdue University Fort Wayne's faculty have achieved a first for the state by being awarded a UNESCO chair, officials announced Thursday. Shannon Bischoff and Mary Nkabo Bischoff now share the role of UNESCO chair on rights education among indigenous and non-dominant language communities with Candace K. Gala, an associate professor of indigenous language and literacy at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. The official location of this UNESCO chair is Purdue Fort Wayne. The university is only the 29th institution in the United States to be awarded a UNESCO chair and the first in Indiana. The United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, is a network that brings together academic and research institutions that are leading efforts to address global challenges through education, the sciences, culture, and communication. More than 1,000 UNESCO chairs have been established worldwide in areas including water management for rural development, technical and vocational education and training educators, digital learning platforms, open education and curriculum, and inclusion in higher education systems. The official locations of the chairs are the Dominican Republic, Malaysia, Finland, Mozambique, and Bangladesh, respectively. Among the U.S. institutions that host chairs are Harvard University, Georgetown University, the University of Chicago, Northwestern University, and the University of Pennsylvania. Bischoff, a linguistics professor, is PFW's chair of the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders. He received the university's Outstanding Research Award for the 2023-24 school year. His areas of specialty include linguistic, anthropology, language policy and planning, educational linguistics, computational linguistics, formal linguistics, linguistic rights, and human rights. Bischoff collaborates with indigenous communities to document and study endangered languages, work that deepens the understanding of language and supports locally driven, mother-tongued-based education. He and his students at PFW have also conducted experimental computational research resulting in digital tools and resources that help language communities expand access to and visibility of their linguistic materials. He was a research fellow at the University of Tokyo and has conducted postgraduate work at the University of Pennsylvania. He has secured more than $2 million in funding for his work, including 7 National Science Foundation grants, 1 National Endowment for the Humanities grant, and 2 grants from the Japanese Society for the Promotion of Science. Bischoff, who is married to Inkabo Bischoff, described the recognition as a true honor for the 3 academics, the campus, students, and community. It affirms that meaningful global impact can begin in local spaces and classrooms, and that collaboration, innovation, and inclusion are not bound by geography, he said in a statement. We look forward to working with our students and partners to advance the shared values of UNESCO, Purdue Fort Wayne, and the United States through research, education, and engagement right here in Northeast Indiana. Inkabo Bischoff, a clinical assistant professor of linguistics, is PFW's director of the Teaching English as a New Language program. She also is director of the English Language Partners program, which connects current PFW students and alumni with multilingual learners globally via free online English classes. The English Language Partners program partners locally with Catholic charities to offer free English lessons to refugees resettled in Fort Wayne. The program is hosted on the PFW campus, collaborates with the U.S. Embassy in Thailand, where PFW students work alongside State Department officials and Thai educators to deliver high-quality online English instruction to that university of students. Over the past 5 years, English Language Partners has served more than 2,000 participants from 9 countries. Currently, the program has partnerships with one of Fort Wayne's sister cities, Takaka, Japan, and the American Corners in Thailand, which are partnerships between the U.S. Embassy in Thailand and Thai institutions. Inkabo Bischoff said, "The program is about more than teaching English. It is also a training ground for future teachers and a cultural exchange program. We strive to demonstrate what is good about the U.S. and how Purdue Fort Wayne students can contribute to the education of people who have limited access to English language education or want to teach English in their home countries," she said in a statement. "The UNESCO chair is one testament of the value and caliber of the education and apprenticeship that is available at this university. Students do not have to look far for quality education and career-building experiences. For many, it is right here in their hometown." Carl Drummond, PFW's provost and vice chancellor for academic affairs, praised the work of his faculty members and their colleague in Canada. "This extraordinary accomplishment reflects the long-term dedication of Bischoff and Gala to understanding and preserving endangered languages," he said in a statement. "Combined with the remarkable work that Inkabo Bischoff has been doing with related programs, I am confident that new doors this designation will open will allow all 3 to accomplish so much more." In February, Bischoff and Inkabo Bischoff presented their research and engagement activities at a UNESCO event in Paris that coincided with the 25th annual observance of International Mother Language Day. The 2-day event theme was reaffirming the importance of linguistic diversity and multilingualism in fostering dignity, peace, and understanding. UNESCO estimates that there are 8,324 languages spoken or signed, with about 7,000 still in use worldwide.
SACS pursuing 58-acre acquisition. Know Your Property Would Help District Expand, by Ashley Sloboda of the Journal Gazette. The Southwest Allen County Schools Board agreed this week to spend $2.3 million on land that would allow the district to someday expand. This week's approval of a 58-acre property acquisition along Noyer Road doesn't mean the deal is done, however. Terms could be renegotiated pending results of a due diligence process led by Engineering Resources Incorporated, Superintendent Joshua St. John said. The work will include land surveys, soil borings, wetland delineation, and an environmental analysis. cost is $31,060 unless another environmental assessment is needed. That would add up to $20,000 to the bill. The property, 314 North Noyer Road, is between Illinois and Bass Roads near the Hamilton Meadows and Verona Lakes neighborhoods in Avoyt Township. It is owned by Frederick W. Francis Estate. Francis died in February at age 99. His obituary noted he began farming at his Noyer Road home when he was about 31. The purchase price is the average of two appraisals, St. John said Tuesday. SACS, which faces a fourth consecutive year of declining enrollment, wants the property for long-term needs, St. John said. The district has more than 500 fewer students than it did in fall 2021, according to preliminary enrollment as of Tuesday. Enrollment is affected by families choosing to send their children to non-SACS schools, both private and public. More adults, 65 and older, are also staying in their homes, reducing housing options for those of child-raising age, St. John said. To me, this just shows that SACS is a really great place to live, he said. The only district-owned land that could support a new school is the 20-acre site just west of Covington Elementary School, St. John said. He noted that's where SACS plans to build a career and technical education center. We anticipate growth in the long term, he said, noting new housing developments. It's wise for us to be in the market for land at this time. This was the second property acquisition resolution the school board has approved in as many years. The other involved 13202 Winters Road in Lafayette Township near General Motors Fort Wayne Assembly Plant. The district's effort to acquire that property is pending, St. John said. Only one SACS school, Lafayette Meadows Elementary School, is in Lafayette Township. The other eight schools are in Avoyt Township, which has seen residential growth near Bass Road.
Southeast development expanding. Ground broken on Roosevelt Reserve's second phase. By Tony Sandelman of the Journal Gazette. Construction of the next 30 homes in the first major Southeast Fort Wayne single-family housing development is 50 in 50 years has officially kicked off. Roosevelt Reserves is a 131-lot subdivision on 126 acres at Tillman and Hessen Castle Roads. Mayor Sharon Tucker, who previously represented Southeast Fort Wayne on City Council, said in a ceremonial groundbreaking Thursday that this project goes back to her political roots. This is a little nostalgia for me because this is where I got my start in city government, she said. This is also one of the opportunities I had to really dive deep into helping motivate change within this area, and it speaks to the strategy of whom we will all come together in a community focusing on how we can bring economic development to Southeast Fort Wayne. City Council lent $5.2 million from the Fort Wayne Legacy Fund, which consists of money generated by the lease and the sale of the city's old power utility, to the project expected to draw more than $34 million of private investment. The loan was initially approved for 263 homes, but Jerry Starks, a Fort Wayne real estate broker and president of Roosevelt Land Development Group, later asked to amend the agreement to reduce the expectation by about half. Officials said then that the initial agreement was no longer reasonable because of the inflationary pressures on the cost of labor, material, and interest rates. Starks said the project would not have been possible without that loan. It's big, and we needed it, he said, noting he would have sold each lot for at least $10,000 more. With that funding and with the support from the city, it's big and makes me feel great that I was part of something that is a legacy. Stark said the housing in the Roosevelt Reserves is market-rate housing, not an affordable housing project. He hopes it will attract a new image for the Southeast Side, he said. If you have affordable housing, disposable income doesn't bring in the big dogs, Stark said. If a person has market rate housing, they probably qualified for a loan, probably have a little bit better job, and now instead of stopping one time or two times at a restaurant, they might stop four or five times a month. So I think it's a very important to get people out here who are well qualified to purchase homes and be well qualified to help businesses get together. Councilwoman Raleigh Booker, who represents the Southeast Side, agreed. I think that there's a certain mindset about what's possible here in Southeast Fort Wayne, she said, referencing a colleague thinking that project was only for affordable housing. This is the type of leadership that will help to reshape what people think is possible here on this side of town. The city council has paused lending legacy dollars. Tucker hopes this development can show the council that impact those dollars can have, she said. Council has been working very hard to make sure that we will keep the corpus of our legacy funds safe, Tucker said. Once they decide they are ready to start funding, I believe they will see the positive results that we can receive when we as a city invest into development of our community through legacy dollars. Starks said seven families have moved into the first phase houses, with more than two arriving by early September. The first phase included 49 homes, and 52 more are expected in the third phase. Officials said it has so far generated more than $5 million in private investment. Stark said phase two has two buyers so far. He expects foundations will be laid in just over 2 months.
Braun, state officials to speak at high-dollar political fundraiser by Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Governor Mike Braun and key administration officials will headline a policy summit August 27th, raising money for a nonprofit that supports his agenda. The price to attend ranges from $2,500 for one session and lunch with the governor all the way to $100,000 as a headline partner. The event is for Hoosiers for Opportunity, Prosperity, and Enterprise, a social welfare nonprofit that provided support during Braun's campaign in the form of policy briefs and polling. The group then expanded its role to helping Braun's transition into office and ran ads against lawmakers on property taxes during the session. Social welfare nonprofits typically have undisclosed donor lists, which is why they are often referred to as dark money. The day-long event at the JW Marriott in downtown Indianapolis will include sessions on energy sources and production, road funding, the future of gaming, K-12 education, healthcare, wage growth, maternal health, tort reform, housing, and the state budget. It begins with a VIP breakfast for partners and also includes a lunch with Braun alongside legislator awards. Confirmed guests include Braun, his chief of staff, Josh Kelly, senior policy advisor, Adam Battilio, and Mitch Rube, the secretary of the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration. Other cabinet secretaries have been invited. It is unclear if those attending will be on personal time or state time. Indiana Democrats took aim at the event in a Wednesday fundraising newsletter. Next week, Governor Mike Braun's dark money group, HOPE, is holding a conference at a luxury Indianapolis hotel where entry costs $5,000 and sponsorships will be involved in roundtable discussions cost $100,000, the email said. 21 years of one-party rule in Indiana has made the Republicans so corrupt that they'll sell you out to the highest bidder without even trying to hide it. HOPE's six-person board is led by Ryan Black, who works for philanthropic organization Stand Together and was previously at the advocacy group Americans for Prosperity. Both organizations have ties to the Koch family, superfunders of Republican causes. Other board members include prominent Republican attorney Jim Bopp, school choice advocate Betsy Wiley, retired tax attorney, and former state representative Dan DeMuzik, and career lobbyist Jim Perricker.
Judge Trump's ex-lawyer can't be U.S. attorney, by the Associated Press. A federal judge ruled Thursday that President Donald Trump's former lawyer, Alina Habba, has been unlawfully serving as the top federal prosecutor in New Jersey. The court saying the administration used a novel series of legal and personnel moves held that Habba's term as the interim U.S. attorney ended in July. It said that Trump administration's maneuvers to keep her in the role without getting confirmation from the U.S. Senate didn't follow procedures required by federal law. Faced with the question of whether Ms. Habba is lawfully performing the functions and duties of the Office of the United States Attorney for the District of New Jersey, I conclude that she is not. Chief U.S. District Judge Matthew Braun wrote, Braun said he's putting his order on hold pending an appeal. A message seeking comment was sent to Habba's office Thursday. The Justice Department didn't immediately respond to a request for comment.
The following are national news briefs. Powell to speak at Fed meeting in Wyoming. From the Associated Press, Stateline, Washington. Both Wall Street and the White House will be paying close attention to Fed Chair Jerome Powell's high-profile speech Friday at the Fed's annual economic symposium in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. It comes as mixed signals about the economy complicate the Fed's upcoming decision on interest rates. Weak data on the job market would suggest the Fed should cut rates, but concerns that inflation could move higher in the coming months make the case for the Fed to stay its current course. President Donald Trump has frequently demanded that the Fed lower rates, adding to the drama surrounding Powell's remarks. Feds look into Tesla lateness on crashes. Federal auto safety regulators have opened an investigation into why Tesla has repeatedly broken rules requiring it to tell them quickly about crashes involving its self-driving technology that may soon be deployed in millions of its cars on U.S. roads. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said Thursday that numerous incidents involving Tesla's driver assistance and self-driving features were submitted far too late, several months after the crashes, instead of within 5 days as required. The probe comes 2 months after the electric vehicle maker run by Elon Musk started a self-driving taxi service in Austin, Texas, with hopes of soon offering it nationwide. Cracker Barrel logo update spurs anger. Cracker Barrel is marching forward with an ongoing makeover, and to some fans' dismay, the chain's new logo now ditches the barrel itself, or rather the drawing many have associated with Cracker Barrel over the years. The man leaning on that barrel is also gone, as are the words Old Country Store. Instead, the new emblem features a simpler design with just Cracker Barrel written on a gold background, which also has a semi-updated shape. Beyond a new logo, the continuing rebranding effort has also included remodeling its country-style restaurants and stores. We have a couple of photos to share with you from today's newspaper. Blake Damerel throws a red frisbee as he plays a round of disc golf Thursday at Shove Park. Blake is wearing a blue t-shirt and red shorts and is standing on a concrete pad surrounded by green grass. Behind him is a park bench. A woman stands by the bench and appears to be watching Blake. Behind the woman is a play area with several play structures painted in red and blue. And in the next photo, three welcome leaders from the University of St. Francis stand outside on a paved drive. In the background are several trees, green grass, and many plants. Also behind the three women is a line of several parked cars. Each of the three welcome leaders holds signs. Miriam Messias holds a sign that reads, Entering Cougar Country. Andrea Balinas holds a sign saying, Welcome home, Cougs. She holds a sign high above her head with a big smile on her face. And the third welcome leader, holding her sign below her chin with a grin on her face, indicates welcome to Cougar Nation.
Administration reviewing all 55 million U.S. visa holders. By the Associated Press, Dateline, Washington. The State Department said Thursday that it's reviewing the records of more than 55 million foreigners who hold valid U.S. visas for potential revocation or deportation violations of immigration rules. The department said all U.S. visa holders are subject to continuous vetting with an eye toward any indication that they should be ineligible. Should such information be found, the visa will be revoked, and if the visa holder is in the United States, he or she would be subject to deportation.
Justices let Trump slash spending on DEI efforts. From the Associated Press, Dateline, Washington. The Trump administration can slash hundreds of millions of dollars worth of research funding in its push to cut federal diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, the Supreme Court decided Thursday. The split court lifted a judge's order blocking $783 million worth of cuts made by the National Institutes of Health to align with the Republican President Donald Trump's priorities. The court split 5-4 on the decision. Chief Justice John Roberts was among those who wouldn't have allowed the cuts, along with the court's three liberals. The high court did keep the Trump administration anti-DEI guidance on future funding blocked with a key vote from Justice Amy Coney Barrett, however. The decision marks the latest Supreme Court win for Trump and allows the administration to forge ahead with canceling hundreds of grants while the lawsuit continues to unfold. The plaintiffs, including states and public health advocacy groups, have argued that the cuts will inflict, quote, incalculable losses in public health and human life, end quote. Radioactive frozen shrimp recalled. More packages of frozen shrimp potentially affected by radioactive contamination have been recalled, federal officials said Thursday. California-based Southwind Foods recalled four frozen shrimp sold under the brands Sandbar, Arctic Shores, Best Yet, Great American, and First Street. The bagged products were distributed between July 17 and August 8 to stores and wholesalers in 9 states: Alabama, Arizona, California, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Utah, Virginia, and Washington State. The producers have the potential to be contaminated with cesium 137, a radioactive isotope that is a byproduct of nuclear reactions. Walmart stores this week recalled packages of Great Value frozen raw shrimp sold in 13 states because of potential radioactive contamination. That concludes the news from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette for Friday, August 22nd. We will now take a short break and return with obituaries and features from the Weekender section.